12. Talk at Earl Hall. 19th April 1912. Columbia University, New York. From stenographic notes. If we look with a perceiving eye upon the world of creation, we find that all existing things may be classified as follows. First, mineral, that is to say, matter or substance appearing in various forms of composition. Second, vegetable, possessing the virtues of the mineral plus the power of augmentation or growth, indicating a degree higher and more specialized than the mineral. Third, animal, possessing the attributes of the mineral and vegetable plus the power of sense perception. Fourth, human, the highest specialized organism of visible creation, embodying the qualities of the mineral, vegetable, and animal, plus an ideal endowment absolutely absent in the lower kingdoms, the power of intellectual investigation into the mysteries of outer phenomena. The outcome of this intellectual endowment is science, which is especially characteristic of man. This scientific power investigates and apprehends created objects and the laws surrounding them. It is the discoverer of the hidden and mysterious secrets of the material universe and is peculiar to man alone. The most noble and praiseworthy accomplishment of man, therefore, is scientific knowledge and attainment. Science may be likened to a mirror, wherein the images of the mysteries of outer phenomena are reflected. It brings forth and exhibits to us, in the arena of knowledge, all the product of the past. It links together past and present. The philosophical conclusions of bygone centuries, the teachings of the prophets and wisdoms of former sages are crystallized and reproduced in the scientific advancement of today. Science is the discoverer of the past. From its premises of past and present, we deduce conclusions as to the future. Science is the governor of nature and its mysteries, the one agency by which man explores the institutions of material creation. All created things are captives of nature and subject to its laws. They cannot transgress the control of these laws in one detail or particular. The infinite starry worlds and heavenly bodies are nature's obedient subjects. The earth and its myriad organisms, all minerals, plants, and animals, are thralls of its dominion. But man, through the exercise of his scientific intellectual power, can rise out of this condition, can modify, change, and control nature according to his own wishes and uses. Science, so to speak, is the breaker of the laws of nature. Consider, for example, that man, according to natural law, should dwell upon the surface of the earth. By overcoming this law and restriction, however, he sails in ships over the ocean, mounts to the zenith in aeroplanes, and sinks to the depths of the sea in submarines. This is against the fiat of nature and a violation of her sovereignty and dominion. Nature's laws and methods, the hidden secrets and mysteries of the universe, human inventions and discoveries, all our scientific acquisitions should naturally remain concealed and unknown. But man, through his intellectual acumen, searches them out of the plane of the invisible, draws them into the plane of the visible, exposes and explains them. For instance, one of the mysteries of nature is electricity. According to nature, this force, this energy, should remain latent and hidden, but man scientifically breaks through the very laws of nature, arrests it, and even imprisons it for his use. In brief, man, through the possession of this ideal endowment of scientific investigation, is the most noble product of creation, the governor of nature. He takes the sword from nature's hand and uses it upon nature's head. According to natural law, night is a period of darkness and obscurity, but man, by utilizing the power of electricity, by wielding this electric sword, overcomes the darkness and dispels the gloom. Man is superior to nature and makes nature do his bidding. Man is a sensitive being. Nature is without sensation. Man has memory and reason. Nature lacks them. Man is nobler than nature. There are powers within him of which nature is devoid. It may be claimed that these powers are from nature itself, and that man is a part of nature. In answer to this statement, we will say that if nature is the whole and man is a part of that whole, how could it be possible for a part to possess qualities and virtues which are absent in the whole? Undoubtedly, the part must be endowed with the same qualities and properties as the whole. For example, the hair is a part of the human anatomy. It cannot contain elements which are not found in other parts of the body, for in all cases the component elements of the body are the same. Therefore it is manifest and evident that man, although in body a part of nature, nevertheless in spirit possesses a power transcending nature. For if he were simply a part of nature and limited to material laws, he could possess only the things which nature embodies. God has conferred upon and added to man a distinctive power, the faculty of intellectual investigation into the secrets of creation, the acquisition of higher knowledge, the greatest virtue of which is scientific enlightenment. This endowment is the most praiseworthy power of man, for through its employment and exercise, the betterment of the human race is accomplished, the development of the virtues of mankind is made possible, and the spirit and mysteries of God become manifest. Therefore, I am greatly pleased with my visit to this university. Praised be to God that this country abounds in such institutions of learning, where the knowledge of sciences and arts may be readily acquired. As material and physical sciences are taught here and are constantly unfolding in wider vistas of attainment, I am hopeful that spiritual development may also follow and keep pace with these outer advantages. As material knowledge is illuminating those within the walls of this great temple of learning, so also may the light of the Spirit, the inner and divine light of the real philosophy, glorify this institution. The most important principle of divine philosophy is the oneness of the world of humanity, the unity of mankind, the bond conjoining East and West, the tie of love which blends human hearts. Therefore, it is our duty to put forth our greatest efforts and summon all our energies in order that the bonds of unity and accord may be established among mankind. For thousands of years we have had bloodshed and strife. It is enough. It is sufficient. Now is the time to associate together in love and harmony. For thousands of years we have tried the sword and warfare. Let mankind for a time at least live in peace. Review history and consider how much savagery, how much bloodshed and battle the world has witnessed. It is been either religious warfare, political warfare, or some other clash of human interests. The world of humanity has never enjoyed the blessing of universal peace. Year by year, the implements of warfare have been increased and perfected. Consider the wars of past centuries. Only 10, 15, or 20,000 at the most were killed. But now it is possible to kill 100,000 in a single day. In ancient times, warfare was carried on with a sword. Today, it is the smokeless gun. Formerly, battleships were sailing vessels. Today, they are dreadnoughts. Consider the increase and improvement in the weapons of war. God has created us all human, and all countries of the world are part of the same globe. We are all his servants. He is kind and just to all. Why should we be unkind and unjust to each other? He provides for all. Why should we deprive one another? He protects and preserves all. Why should we kill our fellow creatures? If this warfare and strife be for the sake of religion, it is evident that it violates the spirit and basis of all religion. All the divine manifestations have proclaimed the oneness of God and the unity of mankind. They have taught that men should love and mutually help each other in order that they might progress. Now, if this conception of religion be true, its essential principle is the oneness of humanity. The fundamental truth of the manifestations is peace. This underlies all religion, all justice. The divine purpose is that men should live in unity, concord, and agreement, and should love one another. Consider the virtues of the human world and realize that the oneness of humanity is the primary foundation of them all. Read the Gospel and the other holy books. You will find their fundamentals are one and the same. Therefore, unity is the essential truth of religion, and when so understood, embraces all the virtues of the human world. Praise be to God. This knowledge has been spread, eyes have been opened, and ears have become attentive. Therefore, we must endeavour to promulgate and practice the religion of God which has been founded by all the prophets, and the religion of God is absolute love and unity.